C1M. Number 9A.
Yesterday, we were mainly considering towards the end of the session the connection between the first, second, and third chapter of the textbook. Or, in other terms, we were considering the connection, the natural flow from the Word as the Word to the Word as the Christ, the Word as Christianity. Now, we have a similar flow when we consider the days of creation as from the Word as the Word standpoint, then the commandments from the standpoint of the Word as the Christ, and the Beatitudes from the standpoint of the Word as Christianity. Because we can see there quite clearly, the days of creation first give us the proposition how to approach God in His fullness. And the moment the propositions have been put before our consciousness, the commandments come in and say, well, thou shalt not. You see, it comes in with the demand, life, atonement, and Eucharist, and says, taking in the view of the days of creation demands that we oust out of our consciousness everything which is against that Word as the Word. And so the Word as the Christ really is only showing the anti-Word. See, that's the Word as the Christ. It shows how we have to oust out of consciousness the anti-Word. And actually, in the measure as we fulfill the tones of the commandments and oust out that which is against the days of creation, then more and more the days of creation take place in us. They become broader and more vivid and more tangible in us. And that's the Word as Christianity, the Beatitudes. Blessed are those that. We have always that state of being blessed, of having a blessed state of consciousness. So, and also in those Beatitudes you always see that it not only is that point where we arrive at understanding of a blessed consciousness, blessed are, but that these Beatitudes always have an effect. For they shall inherit, for they shall be, for they shall receive, you see. It's always an effect. Just as we have seen yesterday in the chapter on marriage, that we have seen that blessed state, which is the outcome of the Christ, of the atonement chapter, that blessed state of consciousness always had an effect on the world. You remember that. And so we can see a parallel line in the days of creation, the commandments and the Beatitudes with the first, second, and third chapter. And naturally, next time we'll see the connection with the Lord's Prayer and the tone in the fourth chapter, the Word as Science. So, having perceived that, we must draw our conclusions from it. And the conclusions which we can draw from it is this, that we see that we can never start with the Word as Christianity, that we cannot start really with the Beatitudes, that state of having a blessed inward state of consciousness that is already the effect of that ordered development through the recognition of what the days of creation are, through that second step of atonement and Eucharist, or the commandments, which showed our willingness to oust out of our consciousness and feeling and life and actions that which is against that word, which is against those days of creation. If that has been born in us, then, as we have seen yesterday in that wonderful article on the new birth, that brings us, that is the developing an infant Christianity. I want to remember us again to that statement that she said, that having fulfilled the first step and the second step of the Word of the Word and the Word of Christ, that is developing an infant Christianity. See, it's a fact, it's a law, it's the law of Christianity, which is always demonstration, which is always giving the proof. It is doing something. So, if we long for that blessed state of the Beatitudes, blessed are those that, because they shall receive that and that, As we long for that attitude, we must be clear that we only reach that through the ordered development of the Word of the Word and the Word of the Christ. But we also have the certainty, because the divine law shows it to be like that, the certainty that if we fulfill the Word as the Word, that is, if we are willing to reach into an understanding and a recognition of reality as it is, and that if we are willing through the commandments or through atonement and Eucharist to lay down and sacrifice that which is against that beautiful recognition of the Word as the Word, then we have the certainty that if we fulfill these first two steps, that something is being born in us, which is of the nature of a blessed state, of a blessed state, blessed are. And in the chapter on marriage yesterday, we saw how she depicted this blessed state, because she always showed in each subject, we took the first five subjects, she showed how in each subject, the moment that we really, through prayer and atonement, we are wedded in a measure. It was always in a measure, because it was marriage is a transitionary stage. It's that stage where we are on the way, where we little by little gain each day something, where the human footsteps lead to perfection, where there is continual growth and continual development towards the spiritual ultimate, that as in the measure as we accept the Word as the Word and the Word as the Christ through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, we have seen that in the first subject we become law-abiding. We something in us which is like mind, which is mind-like, begins to be tangible in us, and we become law-abiding. It's a blessed state of being, of respecting law, of respecting moral and legal regulation. But it has shown that blessed state, blessed are ye, has always its reward, has always its effect on the universe. And we saw that every of these subjects had an effect on the universe, that in that measure as we become law-abiding, we become an influence, a molding, constructing influence for society, for civilization. That we lift manhood to a higher and more secure and stabilized society, and so that we contribute to a higher civilization. Then in the second subject we have seen that through that blessed state of being more and more wedded to that which is spirit-like, and therefore feeling within us more and more the spiritual qualities taking place, the spiritual qualities becoming purer and purer in their affections, that blessed state has an effect, and we saw that it has the effect of enriching, enlarging the human nature, that it has that effect that it enlarges and enriches the masculine mind and the feminine mind, the masculine nature and the feminine nature, and so is contributing towards a much broader, wider, more spiritual nature of man. Then in the third subject we saw that through our oneness with soul, through going through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, by ousting out all that is unlike soul, by ousting out that which is selfish, something takes place in us, that soul brings out in us that which is soul-like, namely a selflessness in us, a state of seeing that there is only one big interest, and that there are no egotistic, selfish interests, that we are all wedded to each other in one interest, and brings out that blessed state of wideness, of widening the horizon and outlook, of no more being limited and narrow and little in one's outlook. And that has, as we have seen, an elevating, an exalting influence on the universe, because we have seen that that is that which helps that each partner of the universe, each one in that universe, is being helped, is being sustained in his or her individual duty and mission. That in this way, that through becoming selfless, we become a very a helping influence for each individuality, each one's mission, each one's life. And so we take part in the life of each individual. You see, the thing is broadening out and broadening out. What she shows here in marriage is really that she gives a wider and wider field of the universe in which we live. And then we had the fourth subject, and we saw that through becoming one with principle, and the more we become one with principle through those stages of prayer and atonement and Eucharist, where in the Eucharist we are ousting out of our attitude and consciousness all that which is doctrinal and theological and scholastic and ritual and so on, something in us takes place which is fundamentally basic and scientific. That in that way, that through that purifying process of the chapter on prayer and atonement and Eucharist, something is purified in us, so that more and more that takes place in us which is not personal, which is impersonal, which is foundational in one's thinking and outlook and action, that it is foundationally scientific in one's outlook. And the more we become scientific in our outlook, the more we begin to be a help and a contribution to the universe, namely we contribute towards indestructible relationships in the universe, because science is indestructible. In science, the relationships are indestructible. And in this way, we become a constructive, we contribute to something which the world needs very much and is looking out very much, namely indestructible relationships. And then lastly, we came to the fifth subject of life, and we saw there that the more we become one with life through going through the demands of prayer and atonement, we oust out of ourselves all that is unlike the divine life. We oust out the belief in corporeal life, in embryonic life, in organic life, in material life, and as we oust out that, more and more something takes place in us, which is more and more of the nature of spiritual life or of the heavenly mental state of life, where she says their marriage is spiritual unity, you see, is spiritual unity, where the corporeal unity is giving place to a refined sense of life. And the more that takes place in us, the more instead of the lower sense of life as organic life and structural life, the more, instead of that, the refined sense of life, the love for refined qualities of life, for the finer sense of life takes place in us. She says, that blessed state, she speaks there of that heavenly mindedness, that celestial condition, she speaks in that refined sense of life, she says, that blessed state has an effect. Namely, it has the same rarefying and refining effect on our progeny, on our patients, on our students, on our surrounding, on all that to which we come into contact, because life is that sense of fatherhood which always says that life is mind, the creator reflected in its creation, where the cause, the mental cause within us is always with an effect. We can never go around with us and in the universe with a refined state of thought and not have an effect of that in the universe and in us. It's just not possible, because life is that which determines that cause and effect are one in quality. That's the fatherhood sense. Now, what she has presented there is a very important point. She says the more through prayer and atonement we embody that refined state of mind, that refined state of consciousness, which is life, the more that has its effect on our progeny, on our surroundings, and brings out in our surroundings the same rarefied, finer sense of life. And so, in this way, through our work, you see, in prayer and atonement and Eucharist, we become a blessing to the universe in life as an improving factor, as an improving influence for humanity. And so we improve the general level of humanhood. So that's how far as we have come yesterday. And we were trying to see that these three ways of operation, of the Word as Christ, the Christ and where does Christianity, that they flow into each other in a very natural way, that they are not three watertight compartments. And we have seen that not one of them can stand alone. Not even the Word as the Word can stand alone. Even the Word as the Word, the moment we get hold of that, asks and demands the Christ. It has the seed in itself that it demands and says, all right, if you want me, you have to oust out the anti-Word. And that's the Word as the Christ. And as we do accept the Word as the Christ and do oust out everything that is against that Word as the Word, well, if we do that, in that measure, that Word takes place, takes root in us, becomes bigger in us, you see, and then it is the Word as Christianity. Then it is that state where now the Word as the Word becomes rooted in us, and so is the Word as Christianity. And we can't help that the moment these qualities become more tangible and more alive in us, and more conscious in us, and more that they become also more operative in us. That's the law of Christianity, that it has two wings, understanding and demonstration. Just as the Beatitudes tell us that the blessed state has always an effect of blessing. And so we become a blessing to the universe. Now, let's go on to the sixth subject. And as we go on to the sixth and seventh subject, we will feel that a very definite new tendency comes in. Just as always, when one comes to truth and love, a solution of a higher nature takes place to what has been presented in the first five stages. And in order to see that, I have to go back and back several times to the fifth subject, so as to see clearly what this new sixth step is going to present us. In the fifth subject, Mrs. Eddy has said that the formation of mortals must greatly improve to advance mankind. There, the question was the improvement of mortals. And the fifth subject was, as we have seen, how to improve the human species. But what did she say in that fifth subject? What can improve the human species? And she showed that it is not through matter or material means or material education that it can be done. See, that was the big point. It was the ascendancy of good over evil. It was the ascendancy of the spiritual over the animal nature that can improve mortals. So, and she made only one exception for this improvement and propagation of mortals to matter. That's where concessions is said. If the propagation of a higher human species is requisite to reach this goal, then its material conditions can only be permitted for the purpose of generating. That's the concession which she makes in improving humanity. The only concession to matter, that it says the propagation must be material. But besides that, it says we mustn't make any concessions. Besides that, we must see in that tone that which can improve humanity and a better human species to advance mankind is in the mental and moral and spiritual. It is through ascendancy of good. He speaks there through the ascendancy of good over evil, of the spiritual over the animal. He speaks nothing unworthy of perpetuity should be transmitted to children. She says that we should keep the period of gestation pure and sanctified. You see, she appeals again not to matter, but to a spirit, to a mental, celestial state of our consciousness. She says it is through forming habits of obedience to moral and spiritual laws. And it is again, she says, not by taking a lot of thought for your life, what you shall eat and drink and what you shall put on. But she quotes there from the Bible that taking less thought for your body and for your life will do much more. So even already the fifth subject was showing us that through refined mental and moral and spiritual qualities, we can improve the generation of the human species. And the only concession to matter and body she makes is for the propagation of these mortals. But then at the end of that fifth subject, she makes that very pertinent statement. When I say very pertinent statement, it's always individual, because afterwards, people tell me, well, I don't think that's very pertinent. To me, some other sentence is very pertinent. And so it is. It's always a bit individual. So just let me go and be a bit individual in this case. But she says that, because it's the link there from the fifth to the sixth subject, you see, she says, children should become men and women only through growth in the understanding of man's higher nature. So what she shows here, you see, is that really the spirit, that really the development towards an ever higher humanhood, until then in the seventh subject we reach spiritual manhood, that the development of an ever higher humanhood is not reached through any material or scholarly or theological education, but it is through an ever higher understanding of man's higher nature. And so that gives the link for the sixth subject. In the sixth subject, now she asks, more or less, well, what is this higher nature? What is the form or content of this understanding of man's higher nature? And so, in the sixth subject, we will find how she shows that the higher nature of man must rule really the lower nature of mortals, how a higher nature of man, she makes that big distinction all through between the higher nature of man on one side and on the other side the lower nature of mortals. She compares mortals with men. So when the fifth subject was telling us that really materiality is not first in propagating a better human species, but that really mentality is important for the propagation of the species, and she says it's true in the positive and in the negative. She says if parents have a growth, you say growth, a gross mind, that then children may inherit the same growth traits of character. Whereas if parents have a heavenly state of mind, the children will inherit sounder constitution, better intellect, and better character.